good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, workers at the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley are speaking out about being forced back to work despite the lack of widespread testing that was promised at the plant after five workers died from COVID-19. Well, on Monday, we heard from the head of the union representing the workers. This morning, we'll hear from a worker on the reality of being forced back to the plant, which reopened last Friday, and about the lack of protections for workers. Then a virtual town hall meeting is happening today at noon on the issue of public banking. We'll hear from one of the lead proponents of public banking in Colorado on why, now more than ever, he says this is what we need. Then later today, the full results of a survey of Coloradoans on COVID-19 will be released. We'll hear from the organisations behind the comprehensive survey about the impact that it might have on policy. Just after 8:30, we'll have a special Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf joining us by phone from his kitchen. Then at 8:45 this morning, we'll hear voices of people dealing with COVID-19 from around the world on Transmission Diaries. And at 9 o'clock, we'll take a look at the impact on the food supply system. It's all ahead of us, but first we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Speaking yesterday afternoon, Governor Jared Polis expanded on what the new safer at home phase looks like for Colorado. Governor Polis said we can expect to see a significant expansion in testing capacity for COVID-19.
5,000 tests a day, early May, up to 8,500 tests a day or more, if needed, by the end of May. So in the May time period, what you'll see on average is 5,000 to 10,000 tests a day for the month of May, starting out in that 5,000 range, getting up to 8,500 range towards the end of May. That's the plan. That's the supplies that we have the visibility on and the confidence on to be able to set those goals. And that's up from the about 2,000 to 3,000 tests a day that we have and have been running. So it's significantly increased testing for the safer at home stage compared to the stay at home phase.
Testing is currently being done across the state at a variety of locations, including hospitals, community sites and mobile state-run sites. We've also seen an expansion of partnership with private entity. Governor Polis says this will continue and we will see a pop-up site happening later today and tomorrow at CU Boulder in partnership with King Super's Pharmacy. Steve Miller has more.
The site is located at the CU Boulder Space Sciences Building, 3665 Discovery Drive in Boulder. Registration for the service is required and is available by going to the website krogerhealth.com/COVID testing or by calling 1-888-852-2567. Those interested will use a virtual screening tool based on Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines to see if you are eligible. Registrants will receive an email confirmation with pre-appointment paperwork to complete. Upon arrival, drivers should have their photo ID ready and keep the window rolled up until a healthcare practitioner comes to the car to administer the test, which takes just a few minutes. Again, it is happening today and tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m. and ending at 4 p.m. They are estimating 250 vehicles per day. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The latest figures from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment show nearly 15,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in the state, with 766 deaths attributed to the virus. Warm temperatures again in the forecast for the Front Range today. Highs in the mid-80s, slightly breezy conditions in the morning and some significant gusts possible later this afternoon. Cooling off slightly for Friday. A slight chance of thunderstorms Friday afternoon. Highs tomorrow in the upper 70s. And 70 is the forecast high right now for Saturday, with showers likely in the afternoon. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. As we heard on Democracy Now! Earlier this morning, the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley, Colorado, reopened on Friday. 245 workers there have tested positive so far for COVID-19, and five workers have died from the disease. Well, on Monday, we heard from the head of the union representing the workers. The union has received a cease and desist order from the company over the union's efforts to raise concerns about unsafe working practices after the plant reopened last Friday. Well, this week, Donald Trump invoked the Defense Production Act to keep meatpacking plants in the US open during the coronavirus pandemic, and this includes JBS. Workers there, however, are scared, and they say there are not adequate protections in place to protect them. KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with one worker at the JBS plant in Greeley.
My name is Dustin Hibbs, and I work at JBS Greeley beef plant. And with the COVID-19 going around the plant, it's very serious and scary, life-threatening job situation right now.
It is a situation that you are living right now that you have to really think about going to work because yes, there's a risk of infection. Can you please, Dustin, explain to us how the plant is set up in such a way that it is difficult to keep the social distancing and all the precautions that we are asked to have at this moment of coronavirus?
Okay, when we go into the plant, they give you a mask, they make you use hand sanitizer, and then when you get on the floor, it's hard to practice social distancing because you're working side by side with people and sometimes you bump into them, so it's very hard to practice social distancing on the floor.
How do you feel about Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying that plant owners going forward must be released from all liability in case of death or sickness because it is important to keep the food chain going?
I mean, I'm kind of feared from it because we already had 6 deaths and we had 285 positive tests of JBS workers. And that's not all of the members that are there. That's only the ones that wanted to be tested. So, like, I have a 1-year-old son, so I'm kind of worried of who's carrying the virus.
What are your thoughts about the other workers that are working?
My thought about them is probably the same as mine, like worrying who has the coronavirus and if they are carriers and if, you know, you're going to bring it home, you're going to get sick or you're going to die. Like, you know, that just runs through your mind every day.
What is the union doing to protect you?
Well, as far as I know, union is going on a strike because they preferred that everybody get tested before they reopen the plant. And because that did not happen, union's trying to get a hold of everybody they can to try to get them tested to see who is sick and who's not.
Do you have health insurance?
Yeah, we have a Blue Cross Blue Shield over at JBS. I'm not for sure what kind of coverage they have because I haven't gotten my cards yet, but they just tell us that we have Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Are you close to somebody that got diagnosed with COVID-19? And if that happened, what was the precautions that he had to take?
He had to stay home, quarantine himself to the house and try to limit exposure to anybody else. You know, how is your family, you know, dealing with this? Like, how, you know, how can JBS let this go on? And, like, you know, how can they just reopen after they had all these deaths and, like, they're not doing nothing about it? They're just saying, oh, well, we still need to feed the, you know, the environment. And so we have to keep this plant running. And, like, I'm just like, well, what about the people that just died? Like, what about them? Like, so, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, looking for another job, but it's hard to find a job right now with this COVID-19 now going around.
How long have you been working for JBS?
I've been working for them for 8 months now.
Who do you think are the most vulnerable populations at this moment in time?
The most vulnerable is like the elderly people, like the real old, like people that are over 65 or older. And we do have a bunch of people that are working there that are, you know, up in their ages, and I kind of worry about them because I don't know what they would do, like, if, you know, they get sick because they're not, you know, their immune system's not that good. One of my friends at, you know, at JVS, he is a Spanish person, and he speaks a little bit of English, and, like, you know, he's quarantined to the halfway house right now, and, like, you know, I feel sorry for him because he was exposed to the COVID-19, like he was living in a room with somebody, and I feel really sorry for him. Because, like, he can't work right now. He can't do nothing. He's confined to his room. And so, like, I really feel bad for him because he speaks very little English. And there's not a lot of people that, you know, talk to him because he can't speak English very well.
Just explain to us how the plant, the processing plant, is set up in such a way that it is difficult, even if you want to keep social distance, is impossible.
Okay, so like where I work at, when we go in, they give us a mask, and then they have hand sanitizer machines that you just hold your hand underneath and it sprays hand sanitizer on it. And then you go in on the floor, and there's like, I'd say maybe 10 or 12 stations side by side from each other, and like we have to work in those stations. As the meat comes by, we are, you know, cutting it. We are, doing everything we have to do to get it ready to be shipped out. And, like, we bump shoulders, we bump arms, and, like, there's no social distance on the floor, which is very, concerned. But they say because we're wearing a mask, there's nothing to worry about, and they give hand sanitizer. But I don't feel like that's enough.
Tell me about the testing again, please.
They went on the news and said that they were going to have everybody tested, and then they went back on the news and said they're not going to have anybody tested, only if they want to be tested. And so 280-some... members asked to be tested, and they all tested positive.
What other option do you have?
Really, there ain't no other option. Just, you know, keep working at JBS until I can find another job, or, you know, hopefully this coronavirus blows over, or, you know, I keep my health up so I don't get sick. I mean, there's not really much options going on right now.
What would you like us to understand from the situation that you are living, you and your family and others like you at this moment?
We are living in a situation that's really hard to, like, feed the community and feed the, you know, United States. And, like, I just want people to know, like, and understand, like, you know, it's not that I want to do this. Like, I want to work, but I don't want to lose my life at the same time as feeding, you know, people and dealing with, you know, all this stuff. And, like, it's really hard on a person to, you know, worry if you're going to come home sick and die and every day. Like, so I just want people to understand, like, I'm doing this stuff, you know, help the economy, but at the same time, I'm taking a risk with my life to, you know, help other people.
What is the union? What's your union saying that it should be a solution? What are you asking for?
I'm asking for everybody to get tested so that way we know who is carrying the virus and who is not. And the ones that are carrying the virus, I think, should, you know, stay home and, like, get paid for, you know, having the virus. But, like, JBS ain't even doing that. They're just saying, well, we'll give you an excused absence from work, but we're not going to pay you.
That's Dustin Hibbs speaking there with KGNU's Rosanna Longo. Dustin is a worker at the JBS plant in Greeley. As we have been reporting, the union representing the workers there have received a cease and desist letter from JBS telling them to stop talking, essentially, about the conditions that the workers are being forced to work in. The plant reopened last Friday, and on Monday we heard from one of the union organisers, in fact the head of the union, and that was Dustin Hibbs, who's actually one of the workers at the plant there. We'll continue to follow that story here at KGNU. Well, as cities, states and municipalities reel from the economic fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the federal government advocates for states to declare bankruptcy as a solution to all of this, more and more people are taking a renewed look at public banking as a possible way out for local communities to emerge from this. It's long been touted as a way for local communities to really take control of their economies and also be part of the climate crisis solution, because it's much easier to divest from the oil and gas industry if you have a local and a public bank. Well, today there will be a virtual town hall meeting happening on public banking. It's taking place at noon. It's going to be co-hosted by Ellen Brown, a national expert and advocate of public banking, and Earl Stalen, who is the founding chair of the Rocky Mountain Public Banking Institute. He spoke with KGNU's Liz Lane.
In 2008, we experienced the Great Recession. And North Dakota, because of its public bank, stepped in and actually increased lending in the entire state of North Dakota, because they work in partnership with hundreds of local community banks. And because their loans were combined with the community banks, the fact that the Bank of North Dakota actually increased lending meant that North Dakota was completely protected from recession and avoided recession in 2008. They had record employment and record income each year from 2008 and after that, whereas every other state experienced very serious declines. I know some people have said, well, that's because North Dakota had oil and they'd begun fracking. But actually, for several reasons, that's not an explanation. One is that the income from fracking did not actually kick in until 2010. Secondly, Montana and Alaska had as much oil as North Dakota, but they both experienced high unemployment and budget deficits. And then in 2015, several years later, when the price of oil crashed again, North Dakota's economy kept booming in spite of the marked decline in the price of oil. The bank increases its lending in a recession to offset the decline, and you can completely avoid a recession. And you avoid recessions also with a public bank because they avoid creating bubbles. They don't pump up real estate values. They don't pump up stocks or assets the way private banks do, because their goal is simply to maximize short-term income often, and that destabilizes the economy. And here we are in a situation that could well be worse than 2008. The idea that leading politicians are suggesting bankruptcy to states and cities, this is a disaster and will be ruinous for the economy. We can't afford that. And public banks can step in and increase funding to the economy, especially to small businesses and even medium-sized businesses, which the major banks are not interested in funding. They don't know the customers locally, and they shy away from it because it's not really high profit. It's steady profit, but it's not high profit. And most new jobs are in these small businesses that public banks are so good at funding. And of course, as in North Dakota in 2008, the public bank has helped stabilize opportunity banks that make loans in partnership that makes public banks, community banks, even more viable and powerful at this time. And that is that the Federal Reserve, in combination with the Treasury, is making loans available to banks at very low interest rates, a quarter of 1%. And they've relaxed the rules in other ways to get more money into the economy. And public banks could take advantage of that in a way that they will actually inject more money proportionately into the economy than with the big banks. So that's a second reason why people should take a very close look at public banks. And one of the opportunities might be to do it on an emergency basis, because we really are in an emergency. We don't know yet just how long this shutdown is going to occur, but the longer it goes on, the worse for our economy, and the more we need to really step in aggressively to remedy the situation. And we strongly urge people to join our conference at noon today and learn much more about this.
I want to let listeners know that they can register online for free for the virtual public banking town hall taking place today, Thursday, April 30th at 12 noon. You can register for that at a couple of places, 350 Colorado, their Facebook page, as well as the Colorado Public Banking Coalition Facebook page. And those two organizations are just a couple of the groups coming together that see public banking as essential to so many aspects of not just recovery from the pandemic, economic in other words, but also advancing green technology and green energy. So lots of groups coming together for this. Earl, Ellen Brown is going to be a part of this. She's, of course, written lots of books about public banking and the web of debt and has been a guest on KGNU. Following the town hall, and I know there'll be questions and answers from attendees, which will be great, what's the next strategy here in Colorado? I know you're working hard with the legislature as well, briefly.
Well, we have an organization called Colorado Public Banking Coalition, and we have now a petition online that we strongly urge people to sign. They can go to the website of the Colorado Public Banking Coalition, as well as to their Facebook page, in addition with more information about the program today. And there are numerous organizations that have signed on, and many people should please join our petition. And we're working on legislation. We're very privileged to have Jonathan Singer from Longmont in the Boulder area, who's been a strong ally. And we have other council members, mayor of Boulder, and stakeholder participants who will be on our conference call this afternoon.
Well, Earl, that's all the time we have now, but we will be listening carefully at 12 noon today for the Public Banking Virtual Town Hall. And once again, you can register free online to attend that Zoom town hall. You can go to 350colorado.org. You can go to 350 Colorado's Facebook page as well, the Colorado Public Banking Coalition's Facebook page, and Colorado Public Banking Coalition.org. Earl Stalen, thank you so much for your tireless work on this. And we look forward to hearing from you and Ellen and others later on today. Thanks so much.
You're most welcome. Thank you so much, Liz.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Later today, the complete Colorado coronavirus survey results will be released. This is from a comprehensive survey conducted by Healthier Colorado and the Colorado Health Foundation. They released some preliminary results on Monday. I spoke with folks involved about what the findings were. This is, just as I said, preliminary results released on Monday. Some of the findings showed that more than 60% of Coloradoans would like policy that favors health and safety when it comes to reopening businesses in the state.
I think one of the things that we think is really valuable in this survey is the ability to hear from people beyond just the folks that we're directly connected to. So the folks that you come into contact with that happen to be in your network of family and friends and coworkers and all that, to really get that cross-section of how different people across the state of Colorado are experiencing COVID-19. And the different patterns that we're seeing and how it's hitting different folks differently across the state of Colorado. Because you're right, there are lots of statistics out there that talk about the number of cases, the number of fatalities, the number of jobs lost, and some of those other impacts. They're easier to quantify. But what we're able to do with this survey is to add more quantitative information about what people are thinking as well as some qualitative information from open-ended questions where we ask people to say in their own words what they're worried about, what the impacts have been like for themselves and for their families. So what we have now is really the opportunity in Colorado to pair stories of personal experience, stories of personal impact and concern with the quantitative data of not just what are people experiencing, but what are they thinking and what kind of meaning are they assigning to the experiences that they're having? And what do they want to see from their policymakers and from the leaders both in Colorado and beyond in terms of how we're responding to this crisis?
Well, I know the full results will be released on Thursday, but you have released a certain portion thus far, and it does seem that people are concerned about the impact of COVID-19, but they are looking for policy to be made that has their health and safety in mind. Jake, do you want to go through some of the major findings, certainly that were released on Monday?
Sure. First, I'll say I think the process of the survey itself is really telling. People want to talk and people want to be heard, and so much so that we actually finished ahead of schedule. We were able to get so many people on the line that we were able to meet our quotas to get a statistically significant sample even before we projected being able to do so. And I think that aligns with some of the other data that we found in terms of the level to which this pandemic has hit Coloradans, both in terms of economics and in health. I think a lot of people are working under some assumptions that were somewhat dispelled by some of the data that we released today. First, 2 in 3 Coloradans actually want to make sure that we do not rush back to work and normal life until it is safe to do so. And while that is an interesting result in and of itself, if you dig a little deeper, I think it's even more interesting that when you consider that respondents who are in households in which a job or pay has been lost are actually more likely to say that we should be patient in going back and making sure that people are safe versus people who haven't experienced a significant financial loss due to a job loss or a pay cut. That's one big headline that's coming out of this poll that when you dig a little deeper, might be even more surprising.
Was there anything that emerged that really further emphasized statistics or stories that we already knew, or were there surprises, I suppose? Because it does seem that what's playing out now is that the most vulnerable in society, those who are already economically vulnerable, people in marginalized community, the homeless, are yet the most vulnerable in this pandemic. But were there surprises that you saw, any of you saw, that maybe might belie some of the assumptions that we already had?
But one thing is that women and mothers and families, both in lower economic areas of our state, as well as suburban, wealthier places, are feeling tremendous stress and worry right now across the board and impacting, you know, their mental health. And I'm not going to get ahead of myself today, and it wouldn't be right. But women, without question, are really emerging. And it's not just single women, you know, living alone in urban areas of Denver, Colorado Springs, and Aurora. It really is it's a broader measurement where there's clear evidence in this survey that, you know, women and caretakers, if you will, are really being impacted by this more perhaps than men. And obviously folks that, as you mentioned before, that still have a job and have not really been impacted significantly as other folks that are in need.
That was Jake Williams, Executive Director of Healthier Colorado, along with Kyle Rojas-Legleiter, who is the Senior Director of Policy and Advocacy for the Colorado Health Foundation. The two organizations have joined together for a survey of Coloradoans around COVID-19. As we heard, some of the preliminary results were released earlier in the week. The full survey will be released later today, and we'll have a report on this afternoon's headlines and again on tomorrow's Morning Magazine. It is 8:35. In just about 10 minutes' time, we're going to hear a special radio documentary, Voices from People Around the World Living Through the COVID-19 Pandemic. It's called Transmission Times. That's coming up in just about 10, 15 minutes. Then at 9 o'clock, we'll take a look at the food supply chain and how that may or may not be impacted right now by the COVID-19. But we'll first, take a look at local food with Radio Nibbles.
banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. You put the gravy, Davy.
Everybody Eats on Thursday mornings. John Landorf joining us live from his kitchen. We're mixing up the regular schedule a little bit, John, to give you a little bit of extra time because there's a lot of local food news to go over this week.
Yes, and I gotta tell you that right now I'm the only person that's eating at my house, and that's a sign of the times. But yeah, there's a lot of local food news that we wanted to pass along. If you've driven through downtown Boulder on Pearl Street, East Pearl Street, you'll see Frasca and Pizzeria Locale are both boarded up. It just seemed like a sign of the times. It's to prevent vandalism while they're waiting to open. And Frasca co-owner Bobby Stuckey recently said, you know, pretty matter-of-factly, that he expected a third of Boulder's independent restaurants to close by September. I think that's a low count. I would be surprised if half the food and drink establishments that were open in Boulder on March 1st weren't closed, you know, on January 1st of the coming year. It's a difficult situation.
We've already seen some closures already, John. The Heifer and Hen ice cream shop in Boulder, that's closed.
Yes, and also a really historic restaurant in Denver operated by a Japanese-American family, the 20th Street Cafe. It opened in 1946, and it's closed, along with another restaurant nearby called Euclid Hall.
Well, we're also seeing the cancellation of so many food events. The St. Vrain Historical Society's 50th Annual Strawberry Festival Vintage and Antique Market, that was scheduled for mid-May, that has been cancelled, as is the annual Colorado Dragon Boat Festival.
And I really have a hard time imagining that the Great American Beer Festival and similar events will take place this year.
Well, there's even more bad news. We've been waiting for some good news to come out of the food industry. And of course, every summer we anticipate the peaches, the cherries, the apricots, the wonderful fruit that's so abundant later in the season here in Colorado. But that doesn't look like it's going to be happening either.
No, the reports are very bad from the Western Slope. You remember all that snow we got last week, and it froze the buds on the trees. Most of the peach crop is gone, and at least half of it. And we probably won't get any cherries or apricots. And this happens, you know, one or two years out of every seven. But there is good news.
There is good news. I mean, despite all the closures we're seeing a local food business actually expanding.
Yes, Moxie Bread Company in Louisville has opened a second location in Boulder at 4593 North Broadway. And a bunch of restaurants that had been temporarily closed are reopening for, at the very least, for takeout and delivery, including the Boulder Cork, Sushi Zanmai, and Lucky's Bake Shop. So that's good news.
And it does seem that we are seeing some other local companies kind of stepping into the space, I suppose, that has been created here. We reported this a while ago, I think, a local distilling company producing hand sanitizer. So now you can get your hands on some artisan, handmade hand sanitizer. This is through Boulder's J&L Distilling Company.
Right. It's called Snow San. And originally, you know, these things were made in sort of small batches and given away, but the companies are now allowed to actually produce hand sanitizer, and it's available at McGuckin's, some liquor stores, and even for delivery. And there's also some things you can do to help.
a lot of people are looking for ways to help because there is such unprecedented need right now in the community with so much more demand on local food banks, of course, with the schools being closed, many children relying on schools for their main meals as well. So there are various different efforts. There's an organization, Feed the Frontlines Boulder. Tell us about that.
That lets the community donate meals from local restaurants to health workers. And so they get fed, and local restaurants get to keep some staff employed. If you want to help out with that effort, go to feedthefrontlinesboulder.org.
There's also different food drives happening locally. Café Soleil is also delivering meals, this time to folks who are relying on food banks. So they're delivering hundreds of meals a week to the Sister Carmen Center. You can also donate at their website. That's cafesole.com, CafeSole.com.
And if I could take a moment, I've been connected with various hunger and food insecurity local organizations since they started, really 30 or 40 years ago in Boulder. This really, the word unprecedented gets tossed around so much now, I hate to even hear it. But it really is, it's a very difficult situation right now. So many people are unemployed. There's such a great need at all of the food banks. There's a lot of different ways you can help. But there's 40 local food pantries and meal programs that have come together for the Hunger Hurts the Whole Community virtual food drive, because they can't collect cans at the supermarkets. So it's May 1st through 3rd through Community Food Share, and you can help and donate by going to communityfoodshare.org/hunger-hurts.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, many children are dealing with hunger now because, of course, that's where they're getting so many of their meals. Now, there's also a way to help if you maybe have some unspent lunch funds in your child's BVSD student account. Those can also now be donated to help families in need within the Boulder Valley School District.
Yes, and up till now, more than 500 families have generously donated whatever was left in their students' accounts to help. And this isn't just to cancel out lunch debt. This is to feed kids who normally would have been fed at school. So you can contact the Boulder Valley School District to help out with that.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had Brian Copham of the Boulder County Farmers Market joining us to talk about how they're transitioning and trying to adapt right now. They actually have a new virtual market, BCFM 2Go. That's BCFM, the number 2, Go. And you can actually order your produce online. How does it work, John?
There's a menu of items that it's been a very complicated thing to set up, because essentially they're collecting, what's available from local farms and producers, and then they make a menu, and then you order, and then you pick it up. Right now, I think it's just in Longmont, but it's gradually expanding every week. But the other thing too is that the local food stamps, like Olin Farms, are open. You can go and safely support local agriculture by buying at the farm stands.
And of course, CSA is community supported agriculture. Mm-hmm. Those are another way to socially distance while you're buying your food produce, because you could essentially just pick those up at designated places. Right. And I know lots of local farms are offering CSAs as well.
And Brian and the folks at the farmers market are talking about maybe in late May or into June that some modified version of an actual farmers market will be open with social distancing, masks, and it won't be normal. But it will be, a way to get local produce.
But we'll continue to bring coverage of that here on KGNU. But finally, we have to note the sad passing of somebody who's an icon, really, in Denver, in the nonprofit community that really had a relationship with food as well.
Wonderful woman, Josefa Jossie Eyre. She died recently at 89 from COVID. And she was an incredible force of nature in Denver. She launched the Women's Bean Project. You may have seen these bean mixes on the supermarket shelf and other places, and they have some other wonderful packaged products. It's, you know, she masterminded this nonprofit that has only grown and has helped thousands of women develop job and business skills and transition out of poverty.
Well, we remember her fondly and note her passing. John, what's the best thing you've been cooking for yourself recently?
You know, you rediscover things as you do limited shopping and decide to cook something. But I highly recommend Asian eggplant, not the big, fat, dark-skinned, you know, Italian eggplant, but long, thin Asian eggplant, very tender. And it's so easy to cook. You can cook it in tomato sauce and make very fast eggplant parmesan. I baked it. I cut it up, threw it in a pan with sesame oil, ginger, garlic, chili flakes, soy sauce, five spice. And, God, it was really, really tasty.
Sounds good. Well, so much food news to fit in this week. We wanted to give a bumper edition to John Lendorf, but so many local restaurants are still working on keeping their doors open, and that is still through delivery or takeout, curbside pickup, various different things. And John, I know you're going to keep us posted on the various different news. And like I said, there's a lot to get through, so we appreciate you joining us for a bumper edition this morning. Now, you can find John's collection of Boulder restaurant recipes published 30 years ago at his blog. That's johnlendorf.wordpress.com.
Bon appetit.
Bon appetit. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hannah, Dee Dee, Tommy, Dora, Andre. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Pasta Fazula, Tallulah. Oh, do have a bagel, bagel. Now don't be so bashful, Nashville. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hey, this is a party, Marty. There, you get the cherry, Jerry. Now look, don't be so picky, Mickey. 'Cause everybody eats when they come to my house.